Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Oh, behave. Groovy, baby. Shagalicious. It's hard to believe that the movie Austin Powers was made 20 years ago. Even harder to believe, perhaps, is how Mike Myers' sweetly hapless, ineffectually oversexed, swinging James Bond parody has worked its way into cultural staying power. What is it about Austin Powers that makes us giggle so much? This hour on Point, Austin Powers at 20. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did you love the Austin Powers movies? Why? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Garen Daly, longtime film critic and the producer of the Boston Science Film Festival. Garen, welcome back to On Point. Great to see you.
Hi, Tom.
And joining us from Los Angeles, Ryan Parker, senior reporter at The Hollywood Reporter, who recently wrote a terrific oral history of the making of the Austin Powers movies. Ryan, welcome. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much.
Here was the trailer from the first release of Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, released 1997.
In 1967, an international secret agent was cryogenically frozen in case the world ever required his services again. Now, evil is threatening the Earth, and the time has come to bring him back into the 90s.
It's not unusual.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Danger Powers, personal effects.
Actually, my name is Austin Powers. Danger's my middle name.
And off we went. Garen Daly, what was it about this show? Mike Myers, of course, he was at the height of his comedic powers, and he brought this thing, and at first, I don't know if people knew what was going to come. We'll hear from Ryan Parker how this got put together. What was it about Austin Powers that eventually wormed its way into the skulls of so many people who are still quoting it today?
I think the first thing we have to do is take a look that it is a parody of those films of the 60s, of the spy films, the James Bond, the Matt Helms. And, you know, one of the things we don't appreciate is that the people who watch movies and the people who watch TV have been seeing visual images since day one. And they know everything about, I mean, their literacy when it comes to visual images.
The TV generation, the movie generation,
all of that stuff. So when a parody comes along, it usually
it tickles,
is time.
And tickles and tickles.
Everyone knows what the joke is. Everyone is in on the joke. And Austin Powers did a number of different things, one of which is it tapped into that, and it also was first in a number of ways as a comedy for the new millennium.
And before you know it, there it was in the theaters, opening title sequence of International Man of Mystery. Austin Powers is running through the streets, taking pictures of beautiful women, chased by crazy fans, a la the Beatles in A Hard Day's Night. Quincy Jones remade his classic song Soul Bossa Nova for the scene.
Come on, babies, work with me, people. All right, show me love. Great, baby, yeah! Oh, behave.
Oh, behave. And that was just the beginning of the phrases that have stuck out of Austin Powers' little montage of Austin Powers' most famous catchphrases.
Do I make you horny, baby?
Groovy, baby!
Do I?
Oh, behave.
Do I make you randy? Yeah.
Smashing, baby.
Yeah, baby!
Yeah, baby, yeah. I don't want to count the number of times I've heard that since 1997 as a kind of nod to Austin Powers. Ryan Parker, there in L.A., you've gone back and talked with so many of the principals who were involved in this. How did Austin Powers come to be, Ryan?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I had a wonderful conversation with Mike Myers months back. This story was a dream project of mine. I've always loved the film. I was in middle school, actually, when it came out. So when it turned 20, I knew I had to do something. Mike was telling me that his father passed away in the early 90s. They were terribly close, and it really just crushed him. Now, when he grew up, in Canada, but his parents are from Liverpool. And his dad loved the old spy films and introduced him to the spy films. But his dad also had a tremendous sense of humor, loved Monty Python, loved Peter Sellers. So Mike, growing up with his siblings, would watch these movies and just love them and would quote them, and they just became a part of who he was and a part of his humor. Then after his father passed, he was explaining to me that he needed to do something. He had something inside of him that he needed to get out, but he couldn't quite figure out what it was. And then it occurred to him that there was this character that he had in his mind that he did every once in a while just to make himself laugh, that he could put on paper. And that was what he called the bones of the script for Austin Powers, which he told me he wrote in about 2 weeks. After that, he shared the script with his friend at the time, Jay Roach. Now, they met at a party after a movie screening and became movie buddies. They would go, they would see movies, and then they would go have Chinese afterward, and they would just discuss the movies. At that time, Jay had only been a producer on one small little independent film, never directed. But Mike said that he gave Jay the script, and Jay gave him back 10 typewritten notes on it, 10 pages worth of typewritten notes that really just helped clarify and bring the story some structure. And that's really how the ball began rolling on Austin Powers.
So here's Mike Myers with living in Canada, or I mean, you know, born and raised in Canada, I guess, but parents from Liverpool. And describe what it was that he was looking to capture here. I mean, Garen has begun to take us in, but there's a whole style of film, a whole genre, a whole way of filming that he wanted to bring back to life with a full comic twist, right?
Yes, that's absolutely true. But it's important to note that both he and Jay said that they didn't want to make fun of those films. They wanted to pay homage to them. So it wasn't so much an exact parody that they wanted to almost do a parody of a parody. They thought, what if Austin Powers existed as a movie or a comic book that already existed, and they wanted to bring it to life once again? So they wanted to have all those aspects of a parody, but they also wanted it to be very down to earth. They wanted you to care about these characters. One of the way they did that is the really touching moments that are in the film. I mean, you really do feel for Austin when he comes to the 90s and doesn't quite fit in. When he's at the bar giving the peace sign and the frat boys are laughing at him, and when he can't quite figure out the CD player, he thinks it's a record player. You know, there are some really nice nuances in there where you do feel sad for this guy at a point, and that was really important to Jay and Mike, that you do laugh, but you do care about the characters.
Of course, time had passed, things have changed, and of course, Mike Myers not only playing Austin Powers, but playing Dr. Evil, the head shaved there to go for it. Here's a little scene where Dr. Evil, the nemesis, is not very happy after learning that he had a plan to blackmail the British royal family by starting a rumor in Austin Powers that Prince Charles had an affair in order to force him to get a divorce. It won't work. The character number two, played by Robert Wagner, has just told him that indeed Prince Charles did have an affair and did get a divorce. Here's Dr. Evil.
Right. Okay, people, you have to tell me these things, all right? I've been frozen for 30 years, okay? Throw me a frickin' bone here. I'm the boss. Need the info.
A freaking bone here. I mean, it was really funny at the time and still to see so much had changed between the 60s and 90s, and Austin Powers lit it up, Garen.
Yeah, and I think we also should take a reminder that it's been 50 years since Austin's been thawed out. So, I mean, it really is a humorous. And the thing that I like about what they did, what Jay and Myers did, was they took little pieces of things from all sorts of different movies, like that opening sequence dance. I mean, there's elements of Hard Day's Night in there. You can see some of Bob Fosse's Sweet Charity with the dance movements in there.
Yep.
They did that throughout the entire movie. You can actually find points in the movie that are referenced to other movies. And again, as Ryan said, they did it in a way that is respectful to it, but still funny. And the other thing that I like about it is that the comedy itself is the first really episodic sight gag comedy of the new millennium. And it really did pave the way for all the rest of the comedies to come before.
Such as?
Such as any of the Farley Brothers comedies, such as any of the comedies that Will Ferrell has done, who has a cameo in the film.
Yes.
I mean, so
Carrie Fisher, many cameos in this.
You're right. So Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, is the first comedy to break away from the drawing room comedy that had gotten pretty stale in the 80s and the 90s.
I mean, and it went on. It wasn't wasn't just one. It was Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery, 97. 99, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. Shag, great. Austin Powers in 2002, Austin Powers in Goldmember. Did they have any idea, Ryan, when they got this thing up off the ground, that it would take on that kind of life?
No, far from it. As a matter of fact, when they were working on the film, the initial film, they were shooting it as a cult film. They had a shoestring budget, and they were really doing it out of their love of the old films. It was very much Jay and Mike just having a lot of fun doing what they wanted to do. And they shopped the script around quite a bit initially, and no studio was interested until Michael DeLuca at New Line read it. And he told me that he loved it. For the very reason why we were just talking about, at the time, a lot of the scripts that he was seeing were very sitcom-y, and they were just the same formula again and again and again. But this thing came on his desk, Austin Powers, which totally broke the mold. He'd already loved Mike and everything that he did on SNL, so he knew that he could pull off the character, but it was the script that was so fresh that he had to bring the guys in and talk to them and find out what exactly is this crazy British horny spy all about.
Who came up with all the language here? Was all that scripted, the, you know, groovy baby, yeah, the shag stuff, shagalicious, shagadelic, where did that come from?
That all came from Mike Myers. It was all language that he grew up hearing, whether it had been from his family or from other movies, and it was just ingrained in his head one way or the other, and everything that, you know, we saw for the most part was in the script to begin with.
Oh boy, it was fun. Fun to see this British humor poured into an American kind of Hollywood delivery that Americans could have a whole lot of fun with, and Mike Myers just over the top with in Austin Powers. The first, the second, the third. There have been rumors of a fourth Austin Powers movie for years. We'll ask about that, Ryan Parker, with the Hollywood Reporter there in L.A. Garen Daly with me here in the studio in Boston. We're talking this hour about Austin Powers, the movie, the myth, the magic at 20. Can you believe Austin Powers is 20 years old? Is Austin Powers part of your comic relief from life? You can join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Good sense, innocence, grip of mankind. Dead kings and many things I can define. Occasions pass, legends blur to your mind. Incense and love immense, the color of time.
Who cares for the games we choose? Little to win, but nothing to lose.
From the moment I heard Frau say I had a clone, I knew that I'd be safe because I'd never be alone. An evil doctor shouldn't speak aloud about his feelings. My hurt and my pain don't make me too appealing. I don't Scott.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this about Austin Powers, the movie, the myth, the magic at 20, how Mike Myers' shagadelic 60s British send-up fever dream became a kind of comic touchstone to many. Garen Daly is with us, film critic, producer of the Boston Science Fiction Film Festival. He's with me in the studio. Ryan Parker's with us from The Hollywood Reporter. He's written up a big oral history of how Austin Powers came to be behind us there. Just the two of us, the evil mix, creating Will Smith's song of the same name featured in Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, out in 99. Dr. Evil singing to Mini-Me. Of course, Mini-Me. We'll get to that. You can join us this hour. Do you remember the first time you saw Austin Powers? The velvet suit, the crazy glasses, the crazy cravat thing, the teeth, the 60s craziness. Was it shagalicious to you then? Shagadelic? Is it still? Was that Mike Myers at his prime? Did he make you gasp with laughter? Austin Powers, Dr. Evil, his Mini-Me. It just brought back so many of those kind of cliches and types, the sort of 60s sexuality satirized throughout, sent up throughout. Here's a bit. International Man of Mystery, Austin Powers tries to resist the lure of the sexy fembots coming at him so he can focus on his mission of capturing Dr. Evil.
No! 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 I've got to get Dr. Evil! I've got to get Dr. Evil! Baseball, cold showers, baseball, cold showers.
Give it up, Mr. Powers.
Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day! Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day!
Okay, maybe you had to be there. Kevin in Queens, in New York. Kevin, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Wow, I wasn't expected to being hit with memories of grade school, which is when I first saw Austin Powers. I overheard my friends in gym class talking about it, and I rented the VHS from Blockbuster and watched it in the basement, not even understanding half the jokes, but even the whole time from the beginning of him being thawed out and taking a long bathroom break in the very beginning, just the whole movie was so hilarious, even at that age. And I remember keeping the volume down during the jacuzzi, a lot of vagina scene, because I knew if my mom heard it, she'd wonder what the heck was going on. My father and I still have an ongoing gag where every time we see each other and we give a hug, he says, "Come, come, Scott." And we give each other an awkward hug, reminiscent of Dr. Evil.
Yes. And his son, Scott, in the film.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And did everybody like it, Kevin, or was it a special taste? Some people liked it and others no way.
Everybody that I knew loved the first film and the second film. As I grew up, the sequels started to lose their luster a little bit, but yeah. It was such a unique brand of comedy that I had never seen before and made me appreciate all of that type of humor.
Scott, Kevin, I really appreciate your call. Here's a little bit of that first movie's iconic scene between Dr. Evil and his son Scott, played by Seth Green. And of course, Dr. Evil is Mike Myers. This iconic shushing scene, all of which was improvised.
Scott, you just don't get it, do you? You don't. It's no hassle. But all I'm saying, they're going to get away. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Shh. Look, shh. Let me tell you a little story about a man named shh.
Shh. Even before you start, that was a preemptive shh. Just know I have a whole bag of shh with your name on it.
Where, Ryan, did you ask about that? Where did that come from? Is this a British thing that I just don't know? That just made up on the spot? What?
The best part of that scene is that it cost them a half day of shooting, and I can explain why.
Why?
Jay was saying that they had already shot the table scene, which was one of his favorites because that's when everybody would improv the most, and Mike was by far the best at it. But it was important to them to have other actors who could really play off of Mike, and I think that they cast it perfectly. During that scene, out of nowhere, Mike just starts shushing Seth, and nobody really knows what's going on. Now, the problem is that at the time, Jay had already shot all of Seth's reactions to that when Mike was doing other lines.
Okay.
So he had to go back now and reshoot the new reactions to it. And he was a little nervous at first because that was the first time during production that they were going to be quote-unquote held up or go back for a reshoot. But he said that he just had to do it because it was so good and the chemistry was there that even if it cost him a half a day, he just knew in his gut it would be worth it.
I mean, and just scene after scene, there's a scene in which Dr. Evil punishes his inept henchman Mustafa. And this, of course, is played, you mentioned, Garen, you mentioned Will Ferrell, many cameos here, played by Will Ferrell, Mustafa, for having made the hair of his cat, Mr. Bigglesworth, disappear in the defreezing process. And Mustafa's trying to defend his mistake. Dr. Evil pushes a button and sends Mustafa, Will Ferrell, down into a fiery death trap.
Could someone call an ambulance? I'm in quite a lot of pain.
Okay, you've all been gathered here to form my evil cabinet. Excuse me. Yes, he's down there.
Is he dead?
No, not dead. No, burnt. Badly. Yes. Right.
If somebody could open the retrieval hatch down here, I could get out. See, I designed this device myself. Hi. Good. I'm glad you found me. Listen, I'm very badly burned, so if you could just... You shot me.
Okay, moving on.
You shot me right in the arm. Why did...
Okay, I don't know. Is it just me? I guess it's not just me. A lot of people, Garen, went out to see this movie and keep going.
One of the things that I think is important to talk about is the fact that, as Kevin mentioned, he and his buddies were watching this on DVD, and it was really fortuitous that Mike DeLuca was behind this film because he was
at New Line Cinema.
New Line Cinema, because New Line was aligned with Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers was one of the first studios to really pioneer the use of DVDs.
So DVD gave this its super long shelf life.
That's exactly what happened, and kids could watch the same scenes over and over and over again, and that's one of the reasons why it became a catchphrase. So when they released The Spy Who Shagged Me, there was this built-up appreciation for Austin Powers, and so that the second film grossed nearly $300 million when the first one only grossed $68 million.
Wow.
And it was all because of DVDs. And Warner Brothers and this film paved the way for a new paradigm shift on how to market films and how to make monies.
Riding on a sea of DVDs, and off it went, and boy, did it last. Ryan Parker, Garen Daly, please stand by. Right now, joining us from Las Vegas is John DiDomenico. And John's a big Austin Powers fan and a professional impersonator of both Austin Powers and Dr. Evil. He joins us from Las Vegas. Maybe he'll speak to us in character. Austin Powers, John DiDomenico, are you there, sir?
Juicy, groovy, right, John, baby, yeah.
And
hold on, Austin, please relax, okay? Just temper yourself for a moment. Hello, everybody. Very excited to be on your show. Scott, stay right there, okay?
Hi, everybody. John, thank you so much for being with us. Who comes out for this show? Who loves this show? Who loves Austin Powers? When you're sending him up, who's screaming with laughter?
Oh, my thing is any kind of event where he would work. I do a lot of corporate work, so I've done him all over the world, everywhere from Bangkok, Thailand, to Berlin, Germany, to Milan, Italy, all over the U.S. I actually started doing, I do about 30 different characters. I added him right when the first movie came out because a corporation was having a British theme and they needed an Austin Powers. So it's been been a very long run with the absolutely tremendously hilarious character who doesn't seem to age or wane in any way. His people love this guy. Loves the character. All the characters from the Austin Powers films.
I wonder, we've got Sheila calling from Brooklyn, New York, and I wonder if you might speak to her in character, Mr. Powers.
Absolutely. Sheila, hello, baby. You look tremendous, baby. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Powers.
You know, Sheila, I can sense your mojo and my mojo across mojinating.
cross mojinating. Sheila, welcome. You're on with Austin Powers. What's your history with this movie there in Brooklyn or beyond, Sheila?
I have a lot of fond memories of this movie. I was an American attending college in Scotland at the time, and I saw it in the States before it came out in Britain, and I remember introducing it to my friends, and they loved it. And we were at a party, but not everyone had seen it yet. My friends had seen it. We were in Scotland at the time, and we were at a party, and they were quoting from the movie, but not everyone in the party had seen the movie yet.
Makes
it
tough.
My friends were crazy because they were quoting. They were saying, "Do I make you horny, baby? Do I?" And the other people at the party didn't realize that this was from a film. But by the time the sequel came out, it had gained a lot of popularity in Britain. I remember, you know, by the time the sequel came out, everybody wanted to go see the film and everything. So what that person had just said about it becoming more popular because of DVD, because people saw it on DVD even after it came out in the cinema, it really rang true. When it came out at the time.
Sheila, can I ask you, while I've got you, I've got a little bit of that tape, that Do I Make You Horny? And I mean, it brought back this 60s kind of silly, over-the-top, super sexuality. Though Austin Powers seldom, unlike James Bond, there wasn't a lot of follow-through here. But here's a little bit. This is just after being unfrozen in the first movie, clearly still living in the free love 60s. He tries to seduce an incredulous Vanessa Kensington. This is played by Elizabeth Hurley, while rolling around on a rotating bed on an airplane.
Do I make you horny, Randy?
Do I make you horny, baby? Yeah, do I?
Come on, I hope this is part of the unfreezing process.
She puts him right down. I hope this is part of the unfreezing process. Sheila, you saw this, and here was this kind of over-the-top, off-the-hook, off-the-chain sexuality. You know, he's pushing it everywhere, thrusting it everywhere. Did it offend you? Did it amuse you? What did you think of it as a young viewer?
We thought it was hilarious because, of course, we were, you know, college students at the time.
Yeah.
And we actually had an Austin Powers-themed party the year that it came out. And what was interesting is because all my friends were British, they could raid their parents' closets to wear things to this party. Because, you know,
uh-oh,
their parents had grown up in Britain around the time that...
Oh, the bell-bottoms at the back of the closet.
Goofy. Yeah, so it was one of the most memorable parties of our college years was... You know, my friend wore an outfit that her mother wore. Like, she had, like, a silver dress that her mother wore and, like, the long boots and everything, so she could be Vanessa Kensington. So that's why I knew it was great to listen to this story today, because it reminded me of, you know, just how wonderfully that film, like, satirized that time. And, yeah, it was just a lot of fun. We just thought it was hilarious.
Austin Powers, John DiDomenico there in Vegas in Austin Powers. What about it when people look at this, your crazy sexuality, Mr. Powers, and think it's just kind of ridiculous?
Well, you know, the beauty of what Mike Myers did, he somehow made him so lovable that it doesn't come across swarmy. It's funny. It's friendly. It's, you know, when I do this character, and like I said, I do it all over the world, people are just so happy to see this character because he's so happy to see you. You know, it's just this great, he just designed it and came up with something that was so unique and so much fun. But, you know, going back to the quotes, when you think about what Mike Myers did, how many quotes that are now in the American lexicon between all of his characters, you know, Wayne from Wayne's World, Austin Powers, Dr. Evil, Fat Bastard, it's really remarkable that one person was able to put so many phrases into the English language. And people still use it every day. I can, you know, I still hear people, you know, even at events, still saying a lot of the stuff. Yeah, baby. And
oh, yeah. Yeah,
it
flows like water. Ryan, you've talked with Mike Myers about it. Does he think he was at the height of his powers, Austin Powers, then? Or how's he look back on that, Ryan?
You know, that was one of my favorite parts of talking to Mike, as a matter of fact. He gave me this tremendous quote that I actually ended my piece with, I think is maybe one of the best kickers I've ever had, where he told me that, you know, he was devastated when his father passed away. His father never got to see him famous. His father did not get to see him on SNL. His father did not get to see Wayne's World. And he was just terribly hurt by that because he achieved so much thanks to his love and compassion and his father. I mean, everything he knew about comedy and just life in general, he really learned from his dad. It's a wonderful story. But he was telling me that, you know, he took this thing that absolutely devastated him and he's made more people than he could ever realize happy, and that never gets old to him. And that he still can't believe it. He'll never get used to it, is what he told me.
Sheila in Brooklyn, we will never forget you rummaging in the back of your parents' closets in London for old bell bottoms to play Austin Powers with. Kathleen in Nashville, Tennessee. Kathleen, you're on.
Thank you. Well, I have just two quick Austin Powers life-changing moments. And the first one is, I want to thank you for saying that the comedy was groundbreaking and had taken it in a new direction, because that helps explain what, until now, I've called my Austin Powers moment, which is when my husband and I were dating, he wanted to take me to see the movie. And, you know, I, in my highbrow way, said, absolutely not. That's, you
tut,
know, tut. Lowbrow, and I'll never laugh to that. And I reluctantly went to the movie, and, I mean, we were just laughing hysterically through the whole thing. And I thought, what is this witchcraft? You know, why am I laughing at this? And I think it's because it was just a completely different way that the comedy takes you. You don't expect it. You can't have any preconceptions of where you're going. And the other thing is that we have three daughters, 16, 16, and 19. And we just last week showed them the Austin Powers movie. And it was a great, every single one of us were rolling on the floor laughing. And, I mean, that doesn't happen very often, that all five of us find the same thing funny. So that was pretty cool.
Kathleen, I really appreciate your call from Nashville. John DiDomenico in Austin Powers form. We only have you for another few seconds. Take us out, Austin Powers. What's on your mind these days?
I'm just so excited about everyone being so groovy about the whole Austin Powers franchise, and I can't wait to do Austin Powers 4, baby. Yeah!
John DiDomenico in Las Vegas, professional impersonator. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We've got a lot more Austin Powers to look at. Austin Powers at 20 now. Can you believe it, baby? Garen Daly is with us in the studio. Ryan Parker in Los Angeles from The Hollywood Reporter. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Was that Mike Myers at his prime? Did he make you gasp with laughter? Austin Powers, do you remember the language, the costumes, the comic glee, the naughtiness? And how did they get away with that naughtiness? Was it just sweet enough to pass? Is Austin Powers a permanent part of your laugh track? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Is Dr. Evil by They Might Be Giants. the 1999 Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Heaven help you then. You're finished. It's the end. There'll be no retrieval.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Austin Powers, the movie, the myth, the magic at 20. Of course, there were three of them. Behind us right here, Work It Out by Beyonce, from the 2002 Austin Powers Gold member. Garen Daly is with us, film critic, producer of the Boston Science Fiction Film Festival. He's also directing a movie about the famous Orson Welles cinema in Cambridge, which burned down in 1986. Ryan Parker is with us from Los Angeles, senior reporter at The Hollywood Reporter. He's just written a huge oral history of... you guessed it, Austin Powers, ran on the April 27th issue. You can find an excerpt of that piece at our website, onpointradio.org. You can join us as well. Do you remember the language, the costumes, the comic glee, the naughtiness? Is Austin Powers a permanent part of your laugh track? Did you have to be there or not? Maybe it lasts. We have Beyonce behind us right there. Of course, we had, Elizabeth Hurley in the first. We had Heather Graham in the second, as the sort of main female figure. And then Beyonce, there she was in the third film, parodied the sort of heroines of the 70s blaxploitation films like Foxy Brown and Cleopatra Jones. She here was played by Beyonce in her theatrical debut, playing for Austin Powers, Foxy Cleopatra.
The future better get ready for me, because I'm Foxy Cleopatra, and I'm a whole lot of woman.
I'm not sure these movies got better one by one, but they introduced a whole lot of characters along the way. The second film, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, filmmakers introduced a clone of Dr. Evil. Here's Dr. Evil's henchman, number two, played by Robert Wagner, introducing the character that became a cultural icon.
He is exactly like you in every way. Except 1/8 your size.
Breathtaking. I shall call him Mini-Me.
Mini-Me, played by Vern Taylor, and of course Mini-Me, around and around and around, that meme goes. And here's a montage of Frau Farbissina, played by Mindy Sterling, yelling in the first movie, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery.
I want you to meet your son.
My son?
Yeah. Scott! Bring in the fembots! Send in the guys!
Oh, boy. And there we are. Lots of response online. Steve says, I've got the Shagwire paint job on my Austin Healey, smiles everywhere I go. Olivia writes to us, I watched the third movie so many times as a young teenager, I thought it made me edgy and cool. Ha ha. Mary writes, LOL, I was just explaining this movie to my 11-year-old. Didn't realize it'd been 20 years. Karen, what are you thinking as we roll through Austin Powers country?
I think that one of the more interesting aspects of Austin Powers is how moral he is in the immoral world that he did. For instance, you remember in the scene where Elizabeth Hurley is drunk – and he won't kiss her because he doesn't take advantage of women like
that. Yes,
yes,
yeah.
That's an example of morality. And then at the end of International Man Mystery, when Dr. Evil says, you're in the wrong time, and that which is innocent is now corrupt, he goes, no, man, freedom didn't fail. Right now, we got freedom and responsibility. It's a very groovy time.
Yay.
There's a morality. This is one of the reasons why we like Austin Powers, because despite all that Randy talk, he really is a sweetheart underneath all of it.
I mean, there's plenty of Randy talk. Listeners writing to us here, Ms. Fortune writes, the first movie I saw without my parents in theaters, I was 13. We were shocked. Our parents let us go. And she also writes, my mom and grandmother saw Austin Powers on TV years later, and grandma kept repeating, raw sex. That's all it is, raw sex. Okay. Here's from the first one. Vanessa Kensington, Elizabeth Hurley, apologizes to Austin Powers for being suspicious about thinking he might have had sex the night before with another woman. Here's his clueless response.
No, don't be sorry, baby. You're right to be suspicious. I shagged her.
What?
I shagged her rotten, baby, yeah.
I don't believe you, Austin. And she was repellent.
Saucer of milk table, too.
But did you use protection?
Of course. I have my 9mm automatic.
You know I meant, did you use a condom?
Only sailors use condoms, baby.
Not in the 90s, Austin.
Well, they should, those filthy beggars. They go from port to port.
But the earnestness in Austin Powers, the character there. Bill in Newton, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, guest. I think I relate to this more than I even thought. I lost my dad kind of young, and he was as funny as anybody got. And I grew up with his humor and sharing everything he thought the same. And I'm 65 now, so I was fortunate enough to live through all of those wonderful movies, straight and comedic. And so my son is now 19, and I swear that when he was a year old, I sat him in front of the television as best I could. And since then, we've watched every Austin Powers movie together, ever. And every time something comes up between the two of us or something else we both observe, move down the bench, and we make silly comments all the time, and it lasts to this day, and I couldn't be happier and couldn't appreciate Mike Myers more than anybody.
Still laughing, Bill, and around long enough to appreciate the 60s that were being sent up there as well, but it's funny that your 19-year-old son goes for it, too. I appreciate your call. One more right here, Jake in Madison, Wisconsin. Jake, you're on.
Thanks, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. What an honor. Great movies, and a thing too that we should mention is the outtakes on the DVDs. Those are equally as awesome, and one of the first movies to do that. But my last name is Powers, so I really lived this movie thoroughly through high school, and then went on into the military and had the Powers nameplate on my uniform. So everywhere I went, hey, it's Austin Powers. Hey, is your name Austin? And that went on for years. And I always got a kick out of it. Never was really too annoyed with it, but it really was a long-lasting impact on me, and thankfully Jake from State Farm came out, so now I've moved on
Jake, is your middle name Danger?
I was just going to ask. You beat me to it.
Oh, sorry.
I wish.
Yeah, Jake, thank you for calling. And one more here from Omaha, Nebraska. Susan is calling. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom, thanks for such a fun topic on a crazy news week. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we can use it. Huh?
A previous caller had talked about how the first movie was just so original and so funny, and then the second as well, and then it wasn't as funny the third time, but you gave it such latitude because it was just so original and it broke the mold.
Yeah.
And, of course, I bought all three when they were available.
DVD.
It made me think, yes, the DVDs. And then it made me think, though, of Shrek with Mike Myers.
The first
Shrek was just so original and broke the mold and was so funny. And the second, third, and fourth, and was there a fifth? They weren't as funny, but I bought all five of them because it was just, I appreciated his genius, his comedic genius. And that's what I wanted to say. Thank you,
Mike Myers. So glad you share that, Susan. I mean, he deserves his due enormously here, all the way from Wayne's World right on. Absolutely hilarious, Mike Myers, and with a kind of depth to the hilarity that Susan points to there. I think genius is the right word.
I think he tapped into something that we really needed as a culture. It's important to remember that, during all this time, things had changed in America, and he was making fun of it. good comedy makes fun of those cultural touchstones, and he yep. did that brilliantly. I mean, I think one of the reasons this probably hasn't been a fourth Austin Powers is I think that he's struggling to find something that would be able to touch those same points.
He talked with you, Ryan, about playing Dr. Evil and Austin Powers, and said, you know, he wanted to play it both ways. And said that the Dr. Evil character has got some characteristics, some traits from Lorne Michaels, of course, the guy who heads up the Saturday Night Live Brigade forever, the top dog there. What's that about?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. It was a lot of fun at this point because he was reassuring me, I promise, Lorne is not evil. He kept telling me that. What it really is that apparently if you work at Saturday Night Live, you have an impression of Lorne Michaels. Everybody does, apparently. And Lorne knows it and obviously is just fine with it.
The pinky to the tooth thing. Is it Lorne Michaels thing? I had no idea.
He said that was a Lorne Michaels thing. He said that would happen when they were talking about certain scenes at night. He said that Lorne would have a goblet of wine in one hand and his pinky up to his lip as another as he was trying to figure out what scenes he wanted or what characters he wanted where. It was really fascinating. But he also stressed that, you know, there's a lot of Donald Pleasance in there too, who was the James Bond villain, very much akin to who Dr. Evil is as well. So it's a mixture of everything, but Lauren's definitely in there.
Douglas writes to us on Facebook, Austin Powers was awesome, but Dr. Evil stole the show. Freaking hilarious stuff. Douglas writes, here's a little bit from after finding out this is a after finding out that he can't kill Austin Powers by throwing him in a pool of sharks with laser beams attached to their heads because they're on the endangered species list in the 1990s, Dr. Evil takes his anger out on the character number two, played by Robert Wagner.
You know, I have one simple request, and that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads. Now, evidently, my cycloptic colleague informs me that that can't be done. Can you remind me what I pay you people for? Honestly, throw me a bone here. What do we have?
Sea bass.
Right.
They are mutated sea bass.
Really? Are they ill-tempered?
Absolutely.
Well, that's a start.
Oh, my gosh. One simple request. Sharks with freaking laser beams attached to their heads. Brantley in Columbia, South Carolina. Brantley, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit on the younger side, but my mom was a big fan of Mike Myers on SNL.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, when the movies came out, I think we had Man of Mystery and Spy Who Shagged Me on VHS. I think by the time Goldmember came around, we switched to the DVD player.
Yep.
But we always loved the scene where Austin's trying to turn around that little cart in the hallway with inches to spare. And still to this day, if any of us tries to make one of those 1,000-point turns, you know, it's an Austin Powers maneuver.
Yeah, always. There's an endless possibility of reference there. If you tried to make a 3-point, 4-point, 5-point turn, 1,000-point turn to move the car, I can't get enough of Dr. Evil here. Here's a little more. The first movie over a final gourmet meal, Dr. Evil, Mike Myers, introduces his son Scott to Austin Powers, Mike Myers, whom he plans to kill after dinner. Audiences could not miss the nod to James Bond plot lines.
I want you to meet Daddy's nemesis, Austin Powers.
What, are you feeding him? Why don't you just kill him?
No, Scott, I have an even better idea. I'm going to place him in an easily escapable situation involving an overly elaborate and exotic death.
Why don't you just shoot him now? I mean, I'll go get a gun. We'll shoot him together. It'll be fun. Bang! Dead. Done.
One more peep out of you and you are grounded, mister, and I am not joking.
No, it's got to be overly elaborate and exotic. David in Atlanta, Georgia. David, you're on.
Hey, thanks. Hey, my wife and I happened to be in Lima, Peru when the Spy Who Shagged Me came out. And so we watched it. We went to the theater and saw it down there, of course, in English subtitles. With all the voices in Spanish.
All right. We got many layers going on.
Which was quite funny seeing, you know, Austin Powers and Basil and all those in Spanish voices. And we would sometimes laugh and no one else would laugh. And sometimes the audience would laugh at something. They were, you know, we were looking at the, looking at it, but seeing it in the subtitles. But afterwards, we met a group of people and we were talking about the movie outside, And almost in unison, there were quite a few of them asked us, what is shag?
Well, what was up with the Spanish translation?
I
guess they didn't.
I
guess they just let shag go right through.
I don't know what the translation was. So we made an attempt to very nicely tell them what that was without offending them, but I'm not sure it came across.
I mean, I guess it is funny, Garen, how, you know, in America we just use shag as if it's kind of just a word in Austin Powers. Of course, in the UK, it's very explicit and it's very clear. It couldn't be more straightforward.
It's definitely not rugs.
Sophia writes to us here on Facebook, growing up watching James Bond, Austin Powers was such a deliciously silly take on the whole spy genre. My closest friend and I still greet each other with a variety of quotes. On more than one occasion, mutual friends, significant others have explicitly banned our use of Austin Powers quotes in public, as we will often get louder and louder as the night wears on. Rick in Blue Hill, Maine. Rick, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to say that back when that movie came out, my father-in-law had passed away, and we had a memorial service, and there was a huge reception afterwards, and it got to the evening, we were back home, and everybody's kind of, you know, tired and stunned. It's a little bit bittersweet.
Yeah.
And we're sitting around kind of quiet, and then someone said, it's all right if I put this movie in. And my mother-in-law said, yeah, sure, put it in, because we all movie buffs. And we put in Austin Powers, three generations of it, and everybody was just howling and in tears for, like, however long that movie lasted. It was just the most remarkable juxtaposition to a day that I can imagine.
Where comic relief gets really deep, Rick, and I'm glad you shared that story with us. You know, Ace of Spades writes to us online, this might be the dorkiest thing he's ever heard on NPR. I approve, he writes. We'll go with that. Here's Burke Bacharach. Our time grows short, but here he's singing What the World Needs Now is Love in a guest appearance in the final scene of Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery. Bacharach plays a piano on top of a double-decker bus while Austin Powers drinks champagne and dances with Vanessa Kensington, Elizabeth Hurley, as they drive down the Las Vegas Strip.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Burt Bacharach.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love.
No, Ryan Parker, you gave us the backstory, the oral history. We don't get tired of this. It just goes on. Any chance of that fourth coming out, or is it really done?
Gosh, I sure hope so. And I know a lot of fans do as well. And it, you know, Mike and Jay said that they really hope so too. But they just want to make sure that they give us the best product possible. So I think that it's a real possibility. But Mike just wants to make sure that we love it as much as we've loved the last three.
Mike Myers, love to see him in one more star turn there. Ryan Parker, The Hollywood Reporter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Garen Daly, last word on Austin Powers as we head off down the streets of London.
Last word is, it makes you laugh, and you know what? We can use as much laughter these days as possible, and it's great to see Dr. Evil in the White House.
Okay, there's the last word. Mike Myers could run with that. Garen Daly, always great to have you right here. Come again soon.
My pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Austin Powers, thanks for everything. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
And then laying in the Bombay Allen next day, I know you let the wrong word slip while kissing persuasive lips. The odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man, they've given you a number and taken away.